And I don't know where Carrington is. Where did my friend Carrington go? He is not here. I am singing the Carrington song. Do 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 do.
Hello, dude.
Hello.
You are likely to be eaten.
You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now that's what you're a match in your inventory. You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now that's what you're a match in your inventory.
Do you have a new chair?
I do have a new chair. Look at me and my lack of minimalism. Mm-hmm. I have two pieces of furniture. Three pieces of furniture, technically.
Wow.
Right? That's a lot of furniture.
I don't know, man. I'm not sure what you're becoming anymore. I don't even know who you are.
It's this chair from the early 70s. Mm-hmm. And I think I was talking on another podcast about how I got it from the store. It finishes things. And they were selling this one under the assumption that whoever buys it is going to completely change it. Because right now it's a rough wool, orange and brown plaid chair from like 1972. And they were asking me, like, what kind of fabric am I going to redo it in? I'm like, no. You fully must understand the appeal of this chair for me. The rough orange and brown fabric is the reason I want this chair. It is staying as its lovely self.
Sure. Okay.
I'm embracing all 70s all the time, baby.
Which brings us to our podcast.
Where I play games like I'm in my 70s.
Yes, indeed.
So we finished. We should get to feedback and stuff first.
Feedback.
But
we got a lot of good mail.
We got some great mail, right? Yes. Yeah. And we finished a game with a long and strange title.
Mm-hmm.
A long and strange game. A Zork game, if you will.
Ish. The game was called The Meteor, The Stone, and a Long Glass of Sherbet.
Sherbet.
And I'll just want to jump in right now with...
Jump in.
I'm going to jump right in. I didn't know... that the word sherbet doesn't have an R in it.
Oh, you Americans. So many Americans pronounce it sherbet.
Yes. How do you say it?
Sherbet. Like as if it's kind of like a U or an I. Like S-H-E-R-B. Kind of a U, kind of an I-T. Sherbet. A lot of Americans say sherbet. I was wondering when the game started, actually, when I got the title. I'm like, long glass of sherbet. Seemed to me to indicate it's the drinking sherbet, or Shabbat is how I heard that one, I think.
Yes.
Which is like when I was in Thailand, I encountered that version of sherbet, which is like a cold drink that's very floral. Hmm. Whereas when I say or read sherbet, I'm thinking non-dairy icy dessert, like you eat with a spoon.
Right. Well, I think this they were talking about the drinky kind.
Yeah, the drinky one. There's also the powder. One of the universities I went to, weirdly, was Sheffield. Mm-hmm. And when I was there, people would have what they would call sherbet. Let's have sherbet. And it would be a powder. I'm like, what? And you could... They said mostly you're supposed to put it in a drink or put it in water and you mix it up and you get a drink. But they would sprinkle it on stuff. I'm like... What?
Like,
so you'd get a dessert and you would sprinkle this stuff on
like,
it.
Like, I'm thinking like Nesquik?
Like, exactly. Magic pixie dust. Most bizarre thing. And I couldn't even get anyone to tell me. I'm like, is it that you turn a dessert into a sherbet by putting the magic pixie dust on it? Or is the magic pixie dust itself a sherbet? And they go, yes. I'm like, that doesn't help me. That doesn't help me at all. You weird people in your spoon museum.
Well, you are... way more advanced in sherbet than I am because I thought the word was sherbet. I thought it was spelled sherbet. Now,
so you thought the title of this game was misspelled?
I read right past, I didn't even notice it. I just read right past it. The word was sherbet, and my brain was just like filled in the magical invisible R. Anyway, I found an article at Merriam-Webster that says that sherbet isn't wrong, but the classic version of it is sherbet. Sherbet. Anyway, so there's an interesting article. So I'm not really wrong, but I'm not really right either.
Okay, so it's like an alternative pronunciation, alternative spelling?
Yes. And what's wrong with Wednesday? You said something about...
Have you looked at the D and the N and what order they come in? It's not Wednesday. Yeah. It's Wednesday. I think it's one of those things like ask or whatever. I don't know the term, but there's a term for, in English, we will start flipping letters around in words, and then it becomes the new way to pronounce it. Mm-hmm. And I think Wednesday originally wasn't pronounced as though the N came first. Mm-hmm. We just all started doing that.
So please say, on Wednesday, we have sherbet.
On Wednesday, we have sherbet and Ernie. The Oxford comma is missing from the title of this. That's as far as I got. The meteor, comma, the stone. Mm-hmm. Where's the other comma?
Right.
And then I didn't even play the rest of the game.
I love myself. I love a serial comma. Right. Yeah. Almost as much as I love an invisible R.
Right. Okay.
Let's read the mail, shall we?
You know what? We should do? We should read the mail. We got a bunch of mail. We got some good mail.
Yeah.
I'll pick a mail. I'll start with a mail. Mm-hmm. I pick. Oh, Evan, this is a great one. Greetings, Kevington. Kevington? Sure. Greetings, Kate Carrington. We now have one of those names. We're just going to be.
Oh, we're like a couple now. We're the yeah. Kings, Kington.
Kington.
Carrier, I don't know. Yeah,
I'll be on top of it. I am still teaching a text adventure unit, and each year it goes more smoothly. With the addition of a booty card and now a W drive, I am able to get more games onto real Apple IIs in a shorter span of time. One persistent problem has been getting the students to write complete, coherent games when they're not that well versed in the genre. The obvious solution has been to integrate Eaten by a Grue into the curriculum. I assign an episode to each student who has to listen to it, often at bayonet point. Complete an organizer with answers to a set of questions, and then finally present to the class. This assignment is so wildly popular that several students usually transfer out. But hey, they probably would have transferred out anyway. The important thing is I have more Eaten by a Grue in my life. I'm so happy to hear the adventuring will continue past the Infocom games. Keep up the great work. That's hilarious. Mm.
Excellent. I love it.
Excellent. Yes. The corruption of youth is really the goal of this podcast.
Carrington, we're a required assignment.
Awesome. I hate us. Nothing worse than a required assignment. Mm-hmm. So what do you got?
What do I got? We got Mr. Plotkin. Mr. Zarf Andrew Plotkin.
That guy. What's he done lately?
We talked last episode. We talked about his game, A Change in the Weather,
and then we had to face him in virtual person.
Yeah, then we went to
the Boston IF thing. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, hi Andrew. We talked about your game.
He said, "I just listened to your episode. Thanks so much for your kind words about my writing. Believe me, you can say the game sucks all you want. I don't mind. It's interesting to look back on the game when I wrote it." Infocom had been gone for 5 years and felt like ancient history. We were in a new era of interactive fiction. Now, as you play the game, it's older than I was when I wrote it. Of course, the new era of interactive fiction was not very far from the old one. You mentioned that TADS and Inform games both played exactly like Infocom games. That's because they were both created to do just that. Mike Roberts and Graham Nelson wanted to recreate the Infocom experience. Graham's Inform compiler even generated Z code files, the same format that Infocom had used. By the way, while I created the Lectrote framework, the Z code interpreter in it was written by Danny Willis. Anyhow, when I wrote Change in the Weather, I wanted to do certain things, but there were other things that I didn't think about at all. I wanted richer descriptions than Infocom had room for. I wanted to convey a mood or a sequence of moods. I wanted actions that felt physical and realistic. I wanted to remind you of playing in sand or mud or water with your hands. Also, I wanted a really hard puzzle because IF games had puzzles. Well, you succeeded there, sir. But but I never thought about whether the story needed a puzzle. I never considered the idea that you could improve on Infocom by making the puzzles easier or the story more approachable. Like I said a long time ago, you'll see more of that shift in a few years. Thanks again for playing our old games.
Super nice.
Super nice.
He's a good guy.
Yeah.
We got an email from Doug. This one's pretty funny. Speaking of my lack of furniture, this is Kay Carrington. Love the show and had a flash of insight. Game, eaten by a Gru. You are at Carrington's front door. Open door. Door is open. Enter room. You are in Carrington's front room. Look, there is almost nothing here.
Mm-hmm.
True.
Chair has magically appeared.
A chair has appeared. Ooh, search chair. You find nothing. Nothing but 1970s. Nothing but scratchy, uncomfortable chairs.
An email from Vincent Dickinson, who said, congratulations on finishing all the Infocom games. You've earned 300 out of 300 points in 4,400 moves. I think you've mentioned AI Dungeon a while back, which we did, but I found an interesting podcast interview with its creator. He talks about the implementation and some of the next steps for his company. It's a fun listen. And it's at the Hansel Minutes podcast, I think, or at least hanselminutes.com. I'll put a link in the show notes. That was interesting, completely generated on the fly artificial intelligent.
You give the AI stuff and say, make it this, make the world enter, and then you can just kind of play through it.
Yeah.
I remember that. Yeah. That's right. And it's still up. I think it's at AIdungeon.com or .org or something. We'll have a link in the show notes.
You can find it.
It is still a thing. It's a thing that is still doing its thingness. Mm-hmm. What else did we get? We probably got more.
We did.
We did. Scrolly. So much text. Audifa last time, I remember, by a tweet. It's going by memory, though. I had said in either the last episode or the episode before that, we were trying to figure out who first told us about or first recommended that we play Counterfeit Monkey.
Right.
And we for a very short period, we thought it was Audifa, and then found it wasn't. I'm like, God, if you're dead for me.
Right, it was Karen Hales.
Achievement unlocked. Karen just says, you're dead to me.
We have an email from her, from Karen Hales. Hi, Kay and Carrington. Haha, thanks for the belated recognition that I got. I sent the earliest Counterfeit Monkey recommendation back in 2018. I'm really glad you're continuing with the podcast and including that work. May I now exploit my brief moment of prestige and stature to suggest a flexible and inclusive way to proceed? I'm going to do it anyway, she says. And she has three recommendations, and I think we should discuss these.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, merge IF Comp and Xizzy Award winner lists and add a few early modern IF classics that predated those competitions, Anchorhead, Curses, Jigsaw. Two, submit the list with any other well-regarded works that come to your attention and appeal to you. For instance, the Best Puzzles category of the Xizzy Awards. And there are some fantastic choices in there that would otherwise be admitted. She suggests the Interactive Fiction Top 50 of All Time resources. Two games, in her opinion, that are not to be missed are Ad Verbum by Nick Montfort, more wordplay, and All Things Devours, which is an amazingly intricate, tough, and outstanding selection. Three, instead of constraining yourselves to any order, you could just use a randomizer app. Or if there's a game that you're excited to check out, just do it. Looking forward to further episodes regardless of what approach you choose. So I want to discuss with you, Carrington.
I think she's smarter than we are.
I think she is, definitely.
it's what I get from that is like, you could also just play the games you want to play. I'm like, oh yeah, I guess we can do that.
But sometimes we don't have a direction. Like this time, this episode, there's something I really want to play for next time. We can discuss later. But Sometimes we're like, I don't know. But so, but
you, and then people would listen to us for 20 minutes as we go back and forth. I don't know. What do you want to do? I don't know. What do you want to do? And that makes for great podcasting.
So what? Didn't you do the randomizer app thing back a long time ago with Eaten by a Quarter? No Quarter. Isn't that how you did?
Close enough.
No Quarter.
We did. How did M and I pick those? I don't know. I think it was mostly he would just say, I want to play this next, and then I'd say, okay. I'm pretty pliable. Is that not what we did? Did we pick it based on a thing?
For some reason,
we played a lot of arcade games. It was a long time ago.
I only was I listened most of the time, but I.
You should listen to everything I do, man.
I do. I'm sorry. I thought you used a randomizer, but that's what I was asking. I mean, did it?
I am a randomizer.
Yeah.
It's my secret superpower.
So how would you feel about, not right now, but what if I make a Google spreadsheet, I just make a list of all the things that we just talked about.
Yep.
And
if random.org and go.
Yeah. And we'll just do it. Mm-hmm. If we have nothing else to do, we could.
That way. Although, I love this idea, though, I'm staying open. If something catches you go, I'm in the mood for a thing, then great, let's do that thing.
Yeah.
Like it just... Like now you're saying that you've got something you want to propose for our next one. Great. So sometimes you just like have a game you want to play. And I think we just stay open to that. And I like it.
Okay. Thank you, Karen.
We'll call it the Karen Hales technique.
Yes. Excellent.
Hopefully she'll write in and like give us more tips on how to do things.
Yes, yeah.
Really, I feel more directed now. She's fixing
She just
us.
Needs to be like a life coach for us.
Exactly, right? But not Audifa, because you're dead to me.
Read another letter.
Okay. Here's a long one from Joel, but I remember this being a good one. We'll see if I'm correct in that. Hey, adventurers. Thank you for a fantastic episode to inaugurate your new post-Infocom era. Although I've been listening since the beginning, mostly due to life commitments, I hadn't been able to play along much. The only exception has been when you prompted me to stay up really late playing Thimbleweed Park in time to hear your thoughts on it, for which, thank you, I had a blast. But IF Comp winners, even I have time for that. Let's go! I had actually bounced off a change in the weather about 20 years ago, and this time was determined to get through it. I drew maps, took reams of notes with theories about what things might be for, and painstakingly checked off questions and ideas. I counted how many turns you gain by pushing the boulder in different directions. I followed streams of runoff. I was making progress, and then I got tired and life got in the way. Totally understand. When the episode came out, try not to be spoilery, I was stalled at that one sandbag point, and I reached the spoiler fence. And for the first time ever, I took your advice. I paused the podcast and I fired up Frotz again in an X term, not having a real terminal handy these days. More notes, more experimenting. I got fooled very badly by the red herring you mentioned, blah, blah, blah. Just keep bringing the spoilers. But eventually, I found the right track, got all the way to this climatic scene, and I got stuck again. I had solved all the puzzles, or I thought I had, and still the bad thing happened at the end. My notes were all checked off. The items were all used. I had nothing else. I was stuck. I really wanted to hear what you had to say about all this. So I cracked and I looked at a walkthrough. Turns out, I think, that I had built my thing in a place that helped, like it gained more turns, but wasn't entirely correct. So the final clue from the NPC didn't happen, and I didn't do the last thing that wins the game. I'm glad I looked because I was not going to get there from where I was. And as an aside, I totally understand that. Like sometimes when I look at a hint or a walkthrough, I'm really glad I did because I'll realize, I wouldn't have solved that. I hate it when I look at a hint or a walkthrough and I think I should have got that. And it's just like, oh, now I've ruined my chance to solve it. But you never know going in which would be which. I wish I had a way of knowing in advance, like future me could say, don't read that one, or just don't even try that puzzle. You'll never get it, whatever. But anyway, back to the letter. Anyway, after all that mental heavy lifting, I blasted through Uncle Zebulon in about an hour on QTAS for Linux and enjoyed every second of it, including the running gag about Zork and Dork. What a lovely game. Right now, I'm downloading The Meteor, etc., etc., which is by Graham Nelson. He is the author of The Player's Bill of Rights, a statement against the cruelty and unfairness of games like weather. So it should be a nice anecdote to all the suffering we've just been through. I'm going to play it quickly this time so I don't have to stand next to the spoiler fence, jogging on the spot and being impatient to listen to my favorite podcasters talk about the thing I'm enjoying so much. Love the new format. It's motivating me to play IF again, and I am really happy. Thanks again. Awesome, Joel. That's fantastic. We had talked about the Player's Bill of Rights before, like ages ago, 30 years ago in an earlier episode.
Yeah, right.
And I forgot that was the case. So it is really interesting that we just did an episode where we played a game by the person who made up the cruelty scale. We played a very cruel game by someone who invented the cruelty scale. And now we're playing a game that's also a little cruelly, but by somebody who did the Player's Bill of Rights. It's like two extreme things.
Mm-hmm.
Neat. Mm-hmm. Now they must fight Highlander style.
Oh no. Got an email from Duncan Stevens, which I'm going to summarize. The first thing is he says, okay, he points out something that I figured out too late after we recorded last time. about the first Xizzy Awards were held in 1990. Whatever I said last episode about...
Oh, we were like off by a year.
Yeah. Right. About the Xizzy Awards.
We're still pronouncing it that way, huh?
I'm sticking with it, man.
Okay, I like it. Dig those skills in. I dig it.
How did you say it again?
Kiz.
Right. So
I think it's just Zizzy, so what I had as if said, it's all Zeds.
I had said that the Magic Word Awards started in 1997, and the fact is the first award was given in 1996, and it was So Far by Andrew Plotkin, and it was right there on the website, and honestly, I didn't see it because all of the games have thumbnails next to them except for the first one, so it just was... I just didn't notice it. It was like the R in Sherbert. It just... I don't know.
No, unlike the R in Sherbert.
Unlike the R in Sherbert, which doesn't exist, this did exist, and I didn't see it. I notice things that aren't there and don't notice things that are, or something. I don't know. Anyway, so whatever. Thank you for helping me figure that out. I mean, maybe we'll play So Far one day. And he said that Club Foot...
And its sequel, So Good.
He was asking...
So Far, So Good.
You were asking last time about what Club Floyd used, the Club Floyd
right.
transcript,
yes.
Which I used for this game.
I used for this game, too, because it was like the only hint thing I could find,
right,
except
yeah.
for the built-in hints.
Right. I need an InvisiClues for yep. More modern games.
I'm surprised there wasn't one for this.
So you wanted to know, like, what is this Club Floyd thing that we're cheating from? Mm-hmm. He said Club Floyd isn't, I don't think it's still ongoing, a BBS. It was an interpreter imported into a MUD known as the IF MUD. There was essentially no game content built into it. It was a place for regulars to chat, and it was the virtual forum where the Magic Word Awards were announced every year. But at some point, someone had the idea of writing an interpreter that worked within the MUD. There was even a robot named Floyd who would recite back the game's output in response to the commands directed at him. The results were sometimes clunky, but it was a good way to handle virtual group play of an IF game. So that's how that happened.
So that'd be an interesting Twitter bot if it was just like, boom, and then anybody who goes in just like fires off the next thing to it, like, respond.
Yeah.
It's like... Gotta go quick. I would be griefing that bot a lot.
Just
impossible to play.
I would write a bot that just said like drop all and just sent that every 5 minutes.
I think that's all the notes I wrote for email and tweets. And
I think that's pretty good.
That's plenty. That's lots. It's tons. Should we talk about the game?
Let's talk about the game. We played
the
meteor,
the stone, the comma, and a long glass of sherbet.
The meteor, comma, the stone, no comma, and a long glass of sherbet.
Sherbet.
This was a game,
yes,
which was the winner of IFCOM 1996, and it was written, it was submitted by Angela M. Horns, which, if you rearrange the letters, spells Graham Nelson. So
it's like the first puzzle. Which I guess, I mean, I think you had said or surmised it's probably because like you can't submit the game as his own name or it'd be like almost like cheating. Everyone like, oh, you're so famous.
Yeah. Yeah. I think especially at that point when Inform was super new and.
Or I guess if the game is poorly reviewed, you just never have to admit
right.
it.
Right. Yeah.
That's
right.
Also a good way to go.
Angela can't write a game. So, yeah, and it was a freeware game written with Inform 6, and that's what I know about it. I'll read the back of the box as it was. It says, another day wasted as a guest of the Empress, a wretchedly long tour of the breathtaking Boreal Falls, conducted as ever by the Lady Amelia. As if she weren't bad enough, an honor guard of soldiers, their breastplates red in the setting sun, march ahead of the procession and protect you from seeing anything unrehearsed. It's a dog's life being an ambassador.
I had a lot of... That paragraph gave me feelings.
Yeah.
One, honor guard, spelled with a U, spelled correctly. God save the queen and all that. So I was like, hey, that's cool. It made me not be interested in the game, to be perfectly honest. Because I was like, do I want to be in and do an ambassador game? That mm-hmm. doesn't sound fun. Like, mm-hmm. just didn't appeal at all. And I think if it wasn't for this show, I never would have picked up this game. Like, just like that blurb, just didn't seem my kind. I also had, as much as I was like, yay, Honor Guard is spelled correctly, I was like, there's two spelling mistakes in the paragraph. Well, grammar mistakes in a sense. Honor guard of soldiers, even though soldiers is plural, it's an honor guard. That's singular.
Right.
An honor guard marches ahead and protects you. It doesn't march ahead and
right. It is a singular protect.
Right.
Entity.
And so
right.
I was like, whoa, we got errors in like the first paragraph of the game and the publishing. So I thought that doesn't bode well. Although weirdly, the game is actually really well written. It's just like weirdly trips up on this. But I wasn't really finding, I found one spelling mistake in the game and that was it. So just the only other things I noticed, unfortunately, were in the opening blurb.
So yeah, you start this game and you're up on a, like, in a riding
my
on
favorite a, part of the game is the beginning. You start this
riding,
game.
You're riding on this elephant, basically, in a basket on an elephant. With
the insufferable Amelia.
Right.
Lady, weirdly spelled Amelia. I kept typing her name wrong. And I liked that part the best. I thought that part was the funniest part. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed that bit. It's like its own little mini thing at the beginning where you've got basically one puzzle, how to get off this elephant. And then it opens up into a whole other sort of game. But I liked this first bit a lot.
I felt that it was by itself, I guess, in retrospect, I liked, no, I didn't. I didn't like that part.
You didn't like it at the time?
I didn't like it at the time.
Okay.
I felt like it set a weird pacing for the game. I was frustrated from the start with this game because I was literally, it was just like, is this the entire game? Like,
right, okay. Because you're trapped in not just one setting, but like a... You're sitting in a box,
right?
Like you can't move.
Is this a one room game? You know,
and the first 20 moves could just be wait. Like you can't do anything really for the right. longest time. You're just kind of learning the setting.
I'm like wondering if this is a one room game. I'm wondering mm-hmm. if this is just like a get out of the room puzzle and that's it. I mean,
are you against that kind of thing?
No. But I it's just weird. You know, when you're playing. I just knew nothing about this game, and
right.
I knew there was only 30 points possible score, and I didn't know if this was a 10-minute game, a 2-hour game, or a 2-week game. You know,
right, okay.
So I'm like in this first room trying to figure it out, and I'm just like, is this a one room puzzle game, or am I just really bad at solving this first puzzle? so fine, I cheat. I had to eventually. Like get
oh
some
really?
Help.
Even in the first little bit?
Yeah.
Oh, I
was so
later,
frustrated
but...
by it. I'll get back to that. But
okay.
So I get through that, and then I'm in the second part of the game where you're basically in a small house for the night.
The customs house.
The customs house, and you're there for the night to continue the procession of elephants the next day, right?
Right. Right.
And so you're locked in this thing, and it's again, it's how do we get out? You know, it's again, it's a escape the room puzzle again. Fine, very good. And then all of a sudden, once you get through that, it's Zork. It's like you're exploring underground caves, and you're trying to figure out the magic, and blah blah blah. It's just like, so the pacing was completely weird to me. It's like, what is this game? Is it an escape game, or is it? I found it. That confusing.
Because in the end, what it was Zork type game, a series of puzzles mm-hmm. with kind of a plot, sort of, which weirdly, like I swear I really like that kind of game, but it seems every time we get a game like that lately, I complain about it. But I actually really like that. I'm here for the puzzles.
Yeah. So I'm on the elephant, and the thing with a one room. Puzzle game mm-hmm. is you have a limited you can't go anywhere and there's a limited number of objects, so you need to be able to do everything to everything.
Yes,
you know, you need to be able to pet the elephant, you need to be able to spill the sherbet, you need to be able to do everything. And over and over, I kept hitting, I don't know what that verb is.
Right, yes.
And it was, I found that very frustrating. So like right from the start, I'm frustrated by the puzzle. I'm frustrated by the vocabulary of the thing. And so this game and I got off to a bad start.
But I bet you if you knew it was actually sprawling huge map, which pushes the limits of like how much description, how much you can have, because these file formats are small, then maybe be like, oh, okay, I can't do that because I've actually got 80 things to deal with. Right. But if you're right, if you think I'm just here, I've got two items in my inventory and there's two items and one person in this basket with me.
Right.
Yeah. You got to be able to do everything with everything.
But it says that, you know, you're passing a flag with a pole and the flag like waves into the elephant basket, but touch flag, slide down pole, you know, can't do any of it. No, it's just like, anyway, so yeah. Maybe if I had gone in knowing more, but again, like with a movie or sometimes a book, you know, it's fun to go in blind and but then I don't know. So I was fighting the parser a lot and I felt that the pacing was weird. So,
it's funny cause I kind of had the exact opposite reaction in that I read the first blurb and thought, oh, I'm not gonna like this game. And then when I'm in the elephant thing, I'm like, this is winning me over. I like you try to ask Amelia about stuff and it will say what Amelia doesn't know would fill a whole game itself. I'm like, that's funny. What's another note here? You look at the elephant and it says the magnificent gray beast is wrinkled and has a wise look. But then after an entire day of Amelia's conversation, your average potato would have a wise look. Like I found the humor funny at the beginning. I found the humor, the longer the game went, the less funny I found it. Like there was less things that were funny. And also some of the humor would fall flat. There's a point where you find an ingot and it says like the ingot's an ancient mark with ancient ruins with the word Togni. It says, oh no, actually you're looking at it back to front. Like that doesn't work. That joke should be cut. So whereas I found the beginning funnier, like the game won me over and then kind of wore me down.
The funniest thing Amelia said, I copied it, said, so anyway, Amelia says, so anyway, did I tell you about the time my daddy got arrested by customs? Imagine, actually arrested, my daddy arrested all over that silly misunderstanding about those paintings. And anybody can see they weren't really valuable. So, of course, we had to go invade their kingdom thingy. So that was good.
Yes. And it's so funny how you've got the sherbet and she's wants you to drink it. And that's how I found out. Oh, it's the drinking sherbet. That's the which of the three is it? Surprise, it's a sorbet out of nowhere. And then like later when you get the guidebook and you read it, you find out that like there's this idea that legend, like the first time you drink sherbet, like whoever you drink it with, you're gonna marry them, and so clearly that's why she was waiting for you to have it. And so I like little backstory things like that. I found her character funny. I like the elephant thing. The first puzzle, we can talk about this, spoiler fence, is basically that whole thing in the elephant is one puzzle. Like how do you get off the elephant? And you got to do a bunch of steps to basically call a halt to this procession. And it ended up being one of my favorite puzzles in the game. So I actually found the beginning of this I'm much more favorably disposed to, I think, than you. And then later I kind of liked it less and less as the game went on. To be honest, I wouldn't have finished this game if we weren't doing it for this show. The game lost me enough that I would have given up on it.
I almost rage quit it. There was a part
because of the lily pod
there was a part near the end, around the lily pod, and I read through all the it was around that the end, near 80% towards the end of the game.
Yeah, when I turned to Club Floyd
and I read all the hints, built-in hints, and I couldn't figure it out.
Yeah, there's built-in hints. We should mention that. It's cool.
And then I went to Club Floyd, and then watching them being frustrated, like reading this transcript of them like not figuring it out either, and I'm just like, you know what? I don't. Why am I playing this game? So it was some of it was frustrating, and some of it was like he tried to do a story, and there was definitely some story there, but some of it didn't seem as fleshed out as I would have liked. There was a line where he said, let me see if I can find it. You spy the old man you recognize as the great clot spinner. And I was like, what now? Who? There's been no mention of a clot spinner, or what is even a clot spinner? And there's been no, I like, okay. So you've, after, you know, 70% of this puzzle, you come across this guy that you recognize, but there's been no mention of him or,
right,
or anyone.
Or, I remember I Googled clot spinner to say, they said, is that like a word? Is that a,
is it?
Like, am I supposed to know? I didn't even look it up. No, it came up. I was like, maybe that's just a thing I don't know. Yeah, I had the same reaction.
Okay.
But it's interesting how you can see how, like, I felt this was like full on in the world of Zork, but whether it is, it's clearly, I can imagine like somebody like loving the Infocom games, wanting to make a game in their style, mm-hmm, and kind of in their world, like, and also be like a pastiche and just like, and it really does that. Like it's there's a bunch of weird words. I mean, especially in Zork games, it's always like, let's use the most obscure verb or most obscure way to describe this. In fact, I learned a word in this one. There was a new word for me. I was like, what is that?
What word did you never learn a word. You know everything.
No, that's not true. And this is a really common word that I can't believe I never encountered before. It was scree, S-C-R-E-E. I did not know that.
But we've seen that before. Like a dirt fall. Yeah. Dirt falling down.
No, it was gone from my brain. It's not like you're saying the scree. Yeah. I'm like, what the heck's a scree?
I think we've seen that
like
before.
Loose stones on the slope of a mountain. I'm like, oh. Yeah. But it did not seem familiar to me at all. Did I used to know that word? Uh-oh. That's bad. But also, like, it's this idea that, like, oh, you think magic is back in the world? And we played all these games where it's like, magic is gone, magic is back. Like, Zork is all about the whole magic is gone, mm-hmm, magic is back. What are you going to do? And it's got spells totally done in the way of...
Seem very enchantery.
Very enchantery. And you learn the spell, you got to memorize it, you got to gnusto it, except you don't use gnusto. You just learn the spell and you got to... So it's very Zork, enchanter, it's the underground empire, it's the whole thing.
Yeah.
I happen to be really tired of Zork games, so it did not make predisposed.
I had super high hopes there for a minute when I was like, ooh, there's spells and you have to learn them. And it's like, this is going to be Enchanter. You know how I feel about the Enchanter games.
Totally, right? And even that first spell you learn where you're summoning the insects and stuff, mm-hmm, you kind of use that in a couple of cool ways. And I really dug that. Like, I like the spell games. I remember the first time we played Enchanter, which I think was the first of the spell game ones. I went in with thinking, I'm going to not like spells in these games. This is going to be kludgy. I'm not going to like it. I don't want those... Don't want those tools in my quiver or whatever, or arrows. Oh, there's arrows in this one. And it turns out it's great, and I love it. And it's like a really fun element to add to Infocom-type games. Mm-hmm. So I can see how... But I can see, like, in his instance, we're just coming off years, literally years of playing these games where it's just like, yeah, Zork, I have another Zork, more Zorks, all the Zorks, so many Zorks. And we're like, oh, I'm so tired. I just want to take a break from Zorks. Whereas for this guy, loves Infocom games, and they've just been gone for a decade. Creates this language where you can like make this kind of game. Of course he's going to want to do a Zork game. I would be doing a Zork game by that point. Sure. There is 1996 thing is like, let's make a Zork type game. Like it would be so much more fresh for him and probably the people who played it at the time that it is for my particular right now. I'm tired of Zork context. So I try to give it kind of a bunch of slack because of that.
Sure.
I'm worried. I disliked it more because of my context.
And I also, I mean, want to say the audacity at this point, no, in a positive way. I mean, just like the balls that it took to here's people. I mean, not just Graham, but all of them at that point. Just like, we are going to try to create games. Like, there used to be this company, and this company was like 50 people, right? Of programmers and marketers and whatever, and they made. Like, it took a team of people to make a game, and there's proofreaders and editors and play testers.
So I'm going to do this as a hobby part-time.
Right. And then there's just
the
like
thing.
A guy who's just like, I can do that. And you know what? Some of them aren't perfect, but like, you tried and you were like pushing together and pushing forward an art form. That,
I'm so impressed. And in this case in particular, it's like, well, the first thing I should do is make the language. First, I will create the entire system for making these games. Then I will make one and I will do it as workout. Like, I mean, just like you're right. Just like it takes just so much gnusto. I will gnusto this game. It's just
gnusto.
It's, I don't know. It's remarkable.
Yeah.
And he taught me the word scree again.
Scree. Here's the words I learned. I learned.
Oh, you learned words. So what did you learn?
I always learn words, Carrington. Caparison.
That is a thing you put over a horse's tack.
I knew you'd know this because of your horsey girlfriend.
Of a horsey girlfriend. It's like a decorative spread, you'd call it, like a big blanket. Mm-hmm. Imagine, you only see knights jousting, and the horse has got like a whole big robe on, like on its head, and big blankets. It's that thing. Hmm. So, yeah, it's also called a trapper. People call it a trapper.
Trapper. So
see, I don't know the trapper, word. Trapper. I know keeper. An alternative for the word.
I looked up that word. I looked up the word. It was like, yeah, Carrington knows this because it's.
That one I know. What else you got for me?
Plenipotentiary.
That is a diplomat who's given the full powers to act on behalf of the government.
Jesus, you know everything.
I don't know.
Why am I even here?
I don't know the word scree. Little tiny obvious word.
And this one I don't even know how to pronounce, let alone didn't know what it meant. Let me see if I can. Gesh.
Oh, sure. Like when you're under a... Yeah, Gesh is how that's it. Like you're under a Gesh. You're under a magical compulsion.
Yes, a magical... I super did not know that word. And it's spelled G-E-A-S.
That's just not even know it. You super didn't know
super
it.
Didn't know. G-E-A-S. Gesh.
Yes, I
you think I would have come across that? I mean, I've read fantasy books.
Yeah, totally. That's a word I've come across. Then again, I probably come across Scree 100 times. You can forget a word.
So you're under apparently. A Gesh to keep recording this podcast with me.
Right? Well, yeah, because I get to learn words. I like to learn words. Words are awesome. Awesome is also a word.
It is. Not that awesome a word, ironically.
Ironically. What else do I got? I also found the missing noun thing a lot, which you get in games. Like it's like there's not enough room in the game to have every noun, everything you mention be in the dictionary. And so it can be really frustrating. Like there's this, here's an example. The corridor funnels out into a chamber, turning once again to the south. Though smoother, the walls become hung with cobwebs and you have a sense of disturbing centuries of quiet. Examine cobwebs. You can't see any such thing. And so, that's the problem with, I mean, this we encountered this with Infocom too. It's just like, you can't have everything in the, in the dictionary, but it's a pain. Like you describe a thing and then like you want to be able to examine it.
But sometimes Infocom hit it better. Infocom would say it looks like every cobweb you've ever seen.
Or something like that, or there's no reason to concern yourself with that or something.
Yeah.
Default in I think it's an informed default is like you can't see any such thing. It just says like that's not a word. Which I can see is handy to tell the player that's not a word in the dictionary, so you don't have to worry about it. But it pulls me out of the game when I read that sentence. Because it's like you just said cobwebs. Right. Don't tell me I can't see any cobwebs.
Yeah.
So, that happened a lot.
This game had one of those things. One of those things where there is an object and it hides what it truly is from you.
For me, it was the drum.
Yes, that. Well, I don't know if we should. Yes, and that and the curved stick.
Oh right. Okay. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Right. But the curved
right,
stick.
Right. You're
less
right.
So.
Okay. Yeah. You're right.
But the drum. We'll talk about the spoiler fence. Yeah. But I was like, because the problem is, I know what a drum is. Mm-hmm. That's a word I know. Like scree. Yeah. I know drum. But. The drum isn't a drum. Sometimes a drum is not a drum.
Right. And the curved stick is might be more than a curved stick.
And if you haven't played the game, dear listener, you don't know what the drum is either. So imagine the top five things you think a drum will be. It's none of them. I dare you. I dare you to put it in the first 50 guesses. Not even close. Never. I tell you now, when we get to spoiler fence, we talk about what the drum is, and I tell you what the drum is, you did not guess it. There.
So yeah.
So there. There's you when you go into the customs house, we talk about how you start on the elephant, mm-hmm. and then when you kind of solve the elephant, you're put into another little one or two room little thing, which is the customs house. And you're in this room with a trophy case and a rug, and it's so obviously an homage to mm-hmm. Zork's White House.
That made me laugh.
Right? Me too. Trophy case and a rug. And so obviously I'm like, I played Zork, lift the rug. And it says, with great effort, the rug is moved to one side of the room, revealing a seamless wooden floor. Somewhat embarrassed, you move the rug back again. Like, okay, you got me. You know what we're all here for, Graham. I'm like, that's pretty good. Like totally to put it there, to put in my head that Zork, he knows what I'm thinking and just like controlled it and said, you know you're lifting the rug and I know why you lift the rug and this is a different game. And I'm like, That's pretty cool.
Yeah. That was
cute. And the adventurer later, late in the game, you encounter the adventurer, which is a trope in these Zork games where it's like capital A adventurer. It's you, it's the player, it's the thing going through the cycle of all this. So here we are, Zorking it out again.
Yes, indeed.
Zork out.
Zork out. Yeah, and then, I don't know, the main part of the game, I feel like we haven't really talked all that much about. You're in these caves, and you're exploring, and you're finding stuff, and there's...
Getting spells.
Getting spells and finding the treasure, but then, you know, it's not really a treasure-collecting game, so there's other uses for some of the stuff, and, I don't know, and then you try to save the land from the thing that needs saving from.
Right, exactly, as one is wont to do in these kind of games.
Yeah.
That's as much plot as any of the Zork games have.
Sure, no, that's fine.
I think this game got dinged by a lot of people, and I read some reviews of this game, and everybody dinged it as not being enough plot.
Hmm.
And I think, because this came out in the mid-90s, mid to late 90s, and by then IF was... interactive fiction, and people are just like, I want a story, I want plot, I don't want a chain of puzzles. Mm-hmm. And I'm still in the, hey, I'm playing classic Infocom games, chain of puzzles is totally fine with me.
Right.
So I, as much as I nearly rage quit this game as well, it wasn't because it was the fact that it's a chain of puzzles without a lot of plot, because I like puzzles. I want humor and puzzles from these games. This is what I want. I also really like the games that have a cool story, and I'm super open to that. I think we're going to get a lot of that as we go into modern IF, but my sensibilities are still those of caveman, you know, beat keyboard with stick, solve puzzle. So I'm still there, and everyone's got to wait for me to kind of get into the modern ages. So it's funny reading all these reviews that are like, not enough plot, not enough plot. I'm like, plot? Who wants fiction in your IF?
Did you find any bugs?
I don't want to answer that question.
Okay.
Because I know you found 15. I found another spelling mistake.
Yeah?
Yeah, so there. I found grammar bugs.
Good
and spelling
job.
Bugs. Okay. Syntax bugs is what I find. There's a bubbling pool. Bubbling crude. A bubbling pool. So there's a little hole, a little bowl on the ground. It says, this is a... red brown earthy bowl, a cavity in the hardened soil, but with a single crawl leading out to the southeast. The ground is covered with autumn leaves, russet and variegated. And I typed, being a smartass, I typed count leaves, and it replies, there are 16,339 leaves. I'm like, Graham, point to you. Mm-hmm. Like, that is amazing. Mm-hmm. And it should have said the game score just went up by one, like the game gets one, because that was brilliant. I was like, that's amazing that you thought some total wiseacre like me was going to try to count the leaves and you come up with a number. That was fantastic. My problem was bowl in this red, brown, earthy bowl, this bubbling pool, bowl is spelled B-O-L-E, but B-O-L-E is a tree trunk. It's also the clay that used as a pigment, but a bowl is a tree trunk. And I think he meant bowl as in just B-O-W-L, like it's a bowl, it's a pool. So I think that's a spelling mistake.
Hmm.
But it's an odd spelling mistake. What spelling thing is going to change it to be the pretty obscure word bowl? So
right.
I thought that was weird.
I found.
But I did not find bugs. Tell me about the 15.
Oh no, I found a couple of interesting ones. I'm just going to be vague and not spoiler. In fact, that I created a scroll with a spell on it. Okay.
Okay. Yes.
And a spell appears on the scroll. Take scroll. And it says, the newly written scroll. Taken. Read it. The scroll is as yet unwritten. Inventory. You are carrying a newly written scroll, which is unwritten.
A newly unwritten scroll.
Yeah, that was kind of weird. And the other funny one was, take credentials. Taken. Put them in stove. The formal credentials are closed. Open them. That's not something you can open. Okay.
That's weird.
Yeah. So that was fun.
Oh. Ish. Oh, you win, whatever.
Mm.
So I died a lot in this game. Did you die many times?
I died a few times.
I liked the undo to
fix that. I felt like it...
I never think to do undo. I die and I restore a game. I never think
My undo trigger finger, so
I forget that that's a thing. When we first started playing these games, like, it was a big deal for me to learn some of the single letter things. I knew L for look, but the fact that X for examine still makes me feel like a fancy man. I'm like, X leaves. Yeah, look at me using one letter. Right? That's awesome. And Z for again. Great. Like, that's me.
Z is wait, but okay.
Oh, Z is wait. G for again. So that's what I mean. Like, when I do those things, and not always accurately, when I do those things, I feel like super, super high-end fancy adventure guy.
Power
like
user.
That. But undo is, I'm not punching it that way. Like, I just, I never think that that's a word. Never.
Well, I still type LS instead of look about 10% of the time. So.
That's, I can't believe, I'm probably going to start doing it. I can't believe I don't do that. Because it's so fitting. That's amazing. I like LS. That's awesome.
Okay, so what were you saying? You said...
I said I died a lot.
You died a lot. Why?
The point of that was I died many times.
Why'd you die so much? Choose life. Choose life, Carrington.
The lily pod. Frankie was telling me relax, and then the lily pod ate me or blew up. The lily pod, just over and over and over again, I died on that. There's a few things that just killed me over and over and over and over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we'll get to it when we cross the spoiler fence. But sure. I died a bunch. The game for me, unfortunately, and I hate saying negative things about games, but it was less enjoyable the longer I went, to the point that I was just looking stuff up in the Club Floyd walkthrough, because that's the only walkthrough I could find. The only hint thing I could find was that. And I just opened that up and I started just doing searches for keywords. I used the in-game hints, and I love the fact that it's in-game hints. That was great. But I used a bunch of those too. But I did have to resort to going to Club Floyd, typing in a word, scrolling through it, finding it, and just like finding solutions by the end.
Yeah.
And just to get through it, because the game just lost me, unfortunately. I didn't want to play it.
Some of the hints I looked up because it was too hard. I genuinely tried. I failed. So I looked up a hint.
Which is fine. I have no problem with the game being too difficult for me.
I looked up because I was bored. I was done with this. I wanted this to be over. I'm playing this for Carrington at this point, and that's not a sign of
a game. No, because we're doing this for fun. Yeah. The whole point is to just do this for fun. Like, yeah. It's like, so, yeah. But I honestly, I finished it because of the podcast, which is unfortunate. I think I hate when I say that, because I don't mean to say I proclaim this to be bad. It wasn't for me. It was too hard for me. This game is too difficult for a Carrington. A lot of games are too difficult for a Carrington. Let's face it. And I wasn't in the mood for this game. So it's just like, it wasn't the right game for me. Like 3 years from now, I could have played it then and been like with fresher eyes or something. I needed a much bigger break away from Zork before playing something like this. Mm-hmm. And I need to be better. I don't know how many games I have to play to get good enough to do this. Apparently I'm just never going to be good enough for these games. But it was too difficult for me. And also when I stop enjoying the game, then I don't have it running through the back of my head when I'm not playing, so I'm not coming up with those solutions. When I'm loving a game, when I'm not playing it, part of my brain is still playing it. I was like, I should try that tonight when I come back to the game. And so I come back with enthusiasm, and I'll sit there and I'll feel fresh, and so I stay more awake and I'll try more things. And as the game loses me and it loses my enthusiasm, I will play worse and worse at it, because I'm not bringing my A game, unfortunately. So for me, the game just it wasn't for me.
Mm-hmm.
Alas.
Yeah. I'm a little glad that you feel that way, because I didn't want to be the downer. I was a little afraid you were going to come back. Well, I love this game. It's converted me. I love everything about Zork now.
Oh, God, no. No, no. It's a weird thing, because the game wasn't for me. And to be honest, I didn't really enjoy it by the end. Like, I liked it, and my enjoyment went down as a downward slope, which is the opposite thing you want from entertainment. But I still weirdly really admired it, because I think it's a well-made game by somebody who clearly knows what the heck he's doing, mm-hmm. and like is a Zork size game. Like, mm-hmm. this is a Zork, like, this is somebody who went and said, I've just done what Infocom did. And Changing the Weather was a big, difficult game that took me forever to do, but it was a small game.
Yes.
This is this is Zork size. This is the thing that like Infocom could have put out. Like nobody thought, oh, your game should be larger. This thing's massive. I mean, it's not as big as the Zork games because there's only like maybe six stages of puzzle or whatever. But it's still it's a big game, like well made. So I admire it, though I didn't really enjoy it. So it's kind of where I
fair. Land that's it. That's super fair, and I like that. I like that a lot. Yeah.
So okay. Should somebody play this as their very first game?
No.
No, I don't. I think nobody would finish it as their first game. I think you got to be good to at this one.
Hell.
I'm not good enough. So you shouldn't play it in the first 40 games. You won't be good enough.
Let's see. We talked. So you finished in one, right?
Yes. Took me. I got 30 out of 30. Mm-hmm. I hear you can finish this game and not get 30 points.
Really?
You can finish with fewer than 30 points. I got 30 out of 30, so I don't know what I could have done or what I could have missed and still finished the game. But it took me 1,618 turns. That's that's a lot of moves.
1,551 turns.
Oh.
About the same.
So that's all the notes I have pre-spoiler. The rest of my notes are all marked as spoiler notes.
Me too. All right, well, let's talk about what to do next.
Yeah, you've got ideas, you're saying?
I have an idea.
You got an idea? I like ideas.
I've seen, and since we last recorded, I saw two things in the people on Twitter and the people in the IF community were excited about. One is that Return to Monkey Island has been announced.
I'm very excited.
Coming 2022, and game by Ron Gilbert, the original Monkey Island person. It looks fun, and I think we should play it when it comes out. But Carrington, I've never played the original Monkey Island games.
We totally should be playing Monkey Island then. I played the original Monkey Island ages ago. So this will be one of the few... I mean, is this the first time ever we're playing a game that I've played before and you haven't?
I think so, yeah.
Wow, whoa, yeah. I'm gonna rock it.
So there were several Monkey Island games before, right?
Yes. What,
the original one
the
is
Secret
just called...
Secret of Monkey Island is the first one.
Secret of Monkey Island.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's...
My memory, but going by memory, it's Secret of Monkey Island and then Return to Monkey Island and then the monkeys come back. Infinite Monkeys, Hamlet, something. I don't know.
Okay.
I think it's Secret of Monkey Island.
1990 point and click game published by Lucasfilm.
I love the point and click LucasArts games. Love them.
I've goofed with them. Like I walked the, right. I walked the guy the around the tree
and the dig and like just heck, I love these games.
Okay, so I'm looking for because I want to play the new one, but I need to play the old one first. Yes. So,
and no doubt the new one's going to be a standalone thing, but would be more enjoyable because there's a history to these games, I guess. So
yeah. I think
more enjoyable if we do Secret of Monkey Island. I love the idea of doing Secret of Monkey Island next.
Okay,
yes,
great.
All these people are saying they're so happy that we're going into modern IF. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We're like, yeah, we're doing a point and click game for the 90s. Boom!
Fool you.
That's what you get for liking what we do.
So the other news I saw was that Ken and Roberta Williams.
I've got opinions.
Let's see what your opinions are. They're doing Colossal Cave 3D, which I feel. And again, this is another coming in fall 2022 game. I'm less excited by this because they did a lot of great games, but they didn't do the original Colossal Cave, but they got permission to do Colossal Cave. So anyway, they're kind of, anyway, so what's your opinions on this?
I got opinions. Okay. The first is, I read Ken Williams' book. I think I've talked about it on RCR. He's got a book out now called Not All Fairy Tales Have Happy Endings.
Right. I think I might own it. I haven't read it yet, right. But yeah, it's on my list.
It's a book where somebody wants to make sure you know he is the biggest asshat in the world.
Really?
So this is my book, and I want everyone to realize I'm an awful person. And I'm going to just every chapter tell you what a crappy person I am. I just came away from the book thinking,
wow,
I will never give you a dime of my money.
Can you give
retroactively, I'm happy I pirated your stuff. I look forward to
Can you give an example?
He'll talk about how with employees, it's very important to know that some people are A people and some people are B people and C people. And C people will be fine, like working in a factory, and that's all they can achieve, and they'll be happy with that. But you can't confuse A people and C people, and you make sure you don't hire too many C people because you don't want those people. I was like, wow, dude, wow.
I'm glad I'm a Delta.
Everything Roberta Williams did, because she's not really a very good programmer, and thank goodness he was around. And when he invented everything, I don't know if you realize this, but he invented the adventure game, invented point and click. He invented color in games. He invented, I think, the Apple II as well, invented everything. And thank goodness that Roberta Williams had him around, or she'd be nobody, because she's useless.
Yeah.
She's not a very good programmer.
Yeah, women are like that.
And she even has a response in the game. He says, well, I'm going to show her this. And she responds, and she doesn't respond, I'm divorcing Ken Williams because it turns out he's an asshat. Like, it's just, I couldn't believe, I've never read a book where maybe think, wow, did nobody edit this? Or did everybody edit this and know that people have to know what you're like? It's just like, so that's my thoughts there. I probably had other thoughts. What were we talking about? Just like a visceral reaction.
By the way, women are not like that. I was trying to make a joke. It
right?
fell flat.
Oh, but Ken thinks so.
Ken thinks so.
Oh my gosh. It's really like a management book on how he's, and like he had all these great successes, all of which were 100% him, every time that other people finally did what he said and the board listened to him. And then a whole bunch of failures when he was forced to do things that the board told him to do. He didn't want to.
Oh, yeah.
But he took out a whole bunch of personal loans that he didn't want to, but he was made to do them.
Uh-huh.
And everything that ever happened wrong is because he listened to somebody else's advice.
Oof.
But every great success is when other people listen to him. It's just, it's insufferable. It's crazy. So
make me want to read it.
You want to read this book?
No,
so
I do not.
That's my opinion of that
book. Okay, so, well, good, because my initial feeling was I was less excited by Colossal Cave 3D because I've never... Because A, it's not their game, not originally their.
Oh, I think actually Ken invented it.
Oh, did he?
Oh, good,
and
good
he
actually
him. By himself
the cave out without with his bare hands.
That is,
yes.
And I've never really like had an urge to play the original Colossal Cave either. So, anyway, good. Okay, great. So that's not on the list.
I'm perfectly fine with pirating it.
Okay. But Secret of Monkey Island is next.
Also by Ken Williams. Uncredited.
See, invented it. Great.
Why is she with that guy, man? She's so talented.
And they're still together, right?
Right? I cannot believe it. After reading this book, I'm like, she is so amazing. What is she doing with that guy? This was my takeaway.
Maybe
either
she sees something in him that... that you cannot see,
right.
Or she's also a complete ass.
Maybe. Could be.
Might be perfect for each other.
So anyway, I have opinions.
Yeah, apparently. Good. All right, so Secret of Monkey Island, what platform is that on? Did you play it in the Apple II back
then? Pointy clicky. I would have played it forever ago, probably on like PC or whatever. But I bet you it's going to be available on GOG.
It's on Steam.
Oh, maybe not. It's not the Scum. I've got the thing that lets you just play Scum games.
Oh, I've never
it's
done. Scum. I've never. I'm it's aware of. Game. Aware of the Scum VM, but I've never.
Yeah, pirate everything.
Yeah. All right, so we could play it on Steam. We could play it on GOG. We could play
it
on.
Is it on Steam?
Scum.
Did you look?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Perfect. Yeah.
I want to try the Scum VM thing. See if I can get that to work.
Yeah.
Especially if it's on the Mac. It's on a Mac.
Thing. Looks like I have already bought it. Games I like, I just buy over and over again. It looks like I've bought all the Monkey Island things on GOG. Hmm. It looks like I bought it more than once. It looks like I have a regular one and a Secret of Monkey Island special edition.
Which one should I play?
I don't know.
How special is it?
Okay. I don't know. I didn't play either of them. I mean, I played it back in the day. I just go, I like that game. Let me give GOG $5 so that I rebought it. I don't know. It's a weird thing I do where I just rebuy games I enjoyed in the past with the idea that I will someday play them. And turns out, I will. Look at this.
Well, here we are. Okay. Right. Great. Great. All right, that's set then.
Cool.
Well decided.
Cool.
Talk about the spoiler fence.
There's this thing called a spoiler fence, and our faces are pressed up against the chain links of it right now. So what we do in this podcast, if you're new, and if you're Graham Nelson, and this is the first time listening, and oh my God, I now pit of my stunk. I feel like we just said bad things about a person's game, and they're going to listen. I feel really guilty. I did actually like your game. I'm sorry. So
no, we said bad things about Angela M. Horns.
Yes, she sucks. she's the first wife of Ken Williams. So on the side of the spoiler fence we've been on, the show so far, we try to talk not spoilery. We're all nice and we say things about the game without making you know puzzles, endy stuff. See, I don't want to struggle with these games. Me speak well. But now we're going to leap over the spoiler fence on the other side, the other half of this episode. We talk about the game in more detail where we're going to spoil the ending. We're going to spoil the puzzles, the steps. And so the assumption is you either played the game already or you're not going to play the game. But if you do want to play the game, if you haven't yet, then you can stop listening now. The podcast will still be around. You can always come back, pick it up later. And if you do that, we technically get, like, I think 2 downloads. So it's good for us. Mm-hmm. You should go back later and re-download all our earlier episodes and convince iTunes you're just, like, loving it so much you want it 3 times. It helps us. We get that sweet, sweet podcasting money. So, like, that's what you should do. But if you know you're not going to play the game or you've already played the game or you're just don't really care, then you can join us now on the other side of the spoiler fence where we leap the spoiler fence and we will now spoil the puzzles and tell you how to get off that elephant. And here we are on the other side of the
spoiler fence. Here we are. Watch out for the scree. Don't step in the...
Watch out for that scree. Watch out for that scree. So the first part of the game, you're on an elephant and it's essentially one big puzzle and you didn't like it and I did. So we should talk about that because mm-hmm. I found that part fun. I found that part funny. I liked the solution to the puzzle, which is basically you see a your first 10 moves in this game should just be wait or look or look or look because you really can't do anything. And eventually a bird shows up in the distance. I kept trying to, you got this telescope. So I kept trying to look at everything with a telescope because you have a telescope. Look at her with a telescope. Can't, she's too close. Look, you can look at the forest, but when you try to look at the forest, she nudges you. And so you don't get a good look. And anything else you look at, it says it's too close. And it turns out it's because you just got to wait for the bird. And it says, now you see a bird and it's far away. And you're like, okay, look at the bird. Okay, that'll work. And so it's just, I kind of wish you should look at her with the telescope and see her giant nose. Like, it bugged me that you couldn't.
I learned through the hints that there, at one point you see the river and it looks weird, and if you look at it through the telescope, that you see the river's flowing the wrong direction.
Oh, I didn't.
But
do that.
But I've only know that because I was looking at the hints later. So, yeah.
Does that matter later in the game?
I don't know. Something about the. I don't think so. Because magic is making. Right. It's like hint that there's magic.
Why does that matter? Okay, yeah. So you look at the bird in the telescope. You see that it's a bird of paradise. So you can look up the bird of paradise in your guidebook. Bug me with the guidebook. Keep trying to look stuff up, and it says you can't. Mm-hmm. You don't even
understand. I wrote that down.
Basically, because it's waiting for you to know what you want. So you look up the bird of paradise.
Well, the first 4 things I looked up in the book, it was just like, no. I'm like, this book is useless. And then I look at bird of paradise, and all of a sudden it's there. And I found that frustrating.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I think it's probably really hard to code a book like that. Like, the HTML's got to get it to be able to respond to a ton of stuff. But yeah. I think you kind of have to if you want to put a book in there. It better have stuff. Anyway, you learn that it's mating call. It says a thing, and then the coo is the answer. So then if you just say coo, then it flies down and starts pecking at her head or her hat because her hat's got all the fruit on it. And mm-hmm. so then she stops looking at you. And because she's not looking at you, you can like, do stuff. So you pour the sherbert on the elephant to wake it up. And then you yank its left ear, make it charge in the woods. And bingo, you've stopped the procession and you've solved the first puzzle. And I liked that. I liked all those little steps. I didn't like the fact that you couldn't look other stuff up in the book, but I liked that I could. And when I saw the coup, and I'm like, can I just say coup and it works? I'm like, I thought all that was great. I thought the scene was funny. I thought your responses to Amelia were funny. I liked the solution to this puzzle. All this as a little mini game, I totally liked. I was completely on board at this point.
Okay. So at this point, I had all these, I wanted to slide down the flagpole. I wanted to try spilling the sherbet on Amelia. I wanted to give sherbet to the bird. It wouldn't let me like experiment with any of these things. So I felt
we could call trapped. Those awards the sherbet awards. Can't pronounce Zizzy. It's pronounced sherbet.
So yes. So you get it. You harass the elephant a little bit, and then you get out of there.
Right.
And then the next scene, you're in
the
customs house.
And I spent ages in the customs house trying to get the rope on the hook. There's this hook, and basically the idea is you got to move. There's a stove, and you can throw a rope over this hook and attach to the stove and get some leverage and move it. Like that's the goal, is slide that thing aside. You can't push it when you use the rope, but put rope on hook. Like oh my gosh, I couldn't get the rope on the hook. And what you had to do was, I even tried to like throw rope on hook. Nope. Cause it said you couldn't quite reach it. So I'm trying to stand on stuff, stand on the stove. Can't stand on anything. And you got to throw rope at hook. I'm like, come on, yeah. You knew what I meant.
Yeah, that was a fighting. There was some fighting with the parser. Yeah.
That was the first time I really had to fight the parser in the game. And it came up again later. But boy, the throw rope at hook. Yeah. So
I had to cheat on that. I managed to, I thought you weren't supposed to code. There's some adage about not supposed to code ropes in interactive fiction games because it's just too complicated.
Right, because you can do so many things with them.
Yeah, yeah.
I hadn't heard that adage, but it's a good one. Ken Williams said that once. You know, in his book, to get back to his book because I get more opinions, I'm going to keep bringing this up. It's one of those books where there's a quote at the start of every chapter. Like it'll be like bingo quoted, but about a third of the chapters have a quote at the start from himself. It's a quote, Ken Williams. Mm. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Like, he picks himself as the person he's quoting. And then the next chapter will be Muhammad Ali or whatever and say, never fight Ken Williams, Muhammad Ali. And the next chapter is like him. I'm the greatest man in the world, Ken Williams. Chapter 4. Oh, my God. Okay, I'm over it now.
So, yeah, I tied the rope to the stove and you pull on the rope and
right.
The stove moves a little bit, but not like enough leverage.
Just a little bit.
A little bit. Just a little bit. And yeah, I needed help to figure out what to do and also how to do it.
You got to put sherbet on the ground and make it slippy, and then you push the stove.
You have some food, some garlic, and so I tried mm-hmm. spreading the food on the floor to make it slippy.
I didn't even try that.
Yeah, yeah, you can't do that.
Nope.
Well, I did like about this game. I just thought of it. Is you can carry around an absurd amount of stuff.
An absurd amount of stuff. That's true. The inventory is like crazy. It's just like, you know,
it was great, and it was. I appreciate it, and I've complained so many times about limited inventory games. But
I have so many things.
When I'm actually in this situation where there is no limit on inventory, it did feel kind of ridiculous,
right? And it'd be like multiple. Here's your inventory. Go. Press spacebar to continue. It's like, it's just my list is going.
I've got a basket of food, and I've got like a ladder, and
I've got the trunk. I've got like all these things. I got the ladder, I got a rope, I got food, I got diamonds, I got like so much stuff. Yes.
Yeah.
That's true.
Bows and arrows.
I got bows and arrows. The arrows, you got a boomerang or the curved stick. You want to talk about the stick?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a curved stick. And I tried doing some stuff with the stick. There was
play hockey.
Yeah. No, there was something I was trying to get that I couldn't reach. I don't remember now.
That scroll, the one black scroll.
Yeah. It was the black scroll. It's like, maybe can I reach it with this? Can I reach it with a stick or can I, you know,
tied the rope to it. It's and then I thought I had to like tie the rope to it and then like swing on the rope or something to pull it down. The scree kept killing me. Oh, a scree.
But the curved stick is a boomerang. It's like, you know what? This person
But once you know it's a boomerang, it's fun because you throw it and it's like three turns later, it comes back and hits you on the head.
Right.
I like that.
Okay. Actually, that bothered me because I tried throwing the stick at one point.
But you have to have enough room to wind
right.
up.
Right. No, the thing is, I think I threw it in the right place. Where are you supposed to throw it? Remind me.
Not the place with the light. I thought I had to make it lit and throw it into the cave. That's what you do with the arrows. You throw it to not get the scroll. Why do you throw the boomerang? Not to kill the snake. That's the poison apple.
Whatever it was.
I can't remember now. That's weird.
I threw the boomerang, and it's like the boomerang flies off into the distance. And I'm sorry. The stick flies off into the distance and is gone. And it's like, oh. Well, that
shouldn't
work.
A fox bring that back to
and
you?
And then right. And then
call back to last.
It failed. So I did undo or restore or whatever.
Yeah, you fancy people with your undos shouldn't do that.
Yeah. So, I thought I might need that stick later and I just lost it. I just threw it away.
Right. But if you had waited, it would suddenly
come back.
But if
I had waited,
right.
I would have learned that it's a boomerang. And then it actually changes its name in the inventory from stick to boomerang.
To boomerang, right.
Yeah. So.
What got me was, okay. But anyway, keep going. I want to talk about the drum.
Oh, the drum, same. Yeah, the drum. So you got this drum, and you can hit it. You can hit the drum. You can makes a little hollow noise. You've got a drum. It's not a drum. It's not a drum.
It's for panning gold. It's a gold panning. Like, what? that's described as a drum because it's got like a cloth that's a sieve or whatever. It's supposed to use it for panning grill. So anyway, gold panning. So those at the beginning were saying, I know what a drum is. No, you don't.
You do not.
For panning gold. I totally had to get a hint on that. Get be told what it is. But go. Get some panning for gold. What else do I have difficulty with? Oh, the plum. Not the plum. The plum. I had difficulty with the lily pod. Oh my gosh, the lily pod. The lily pod. But you have to use the poison thing drip onto it and like... Oh,
I was full on. No, I was full on cheating at that point.
I full on just read through the walkthrough and said, okay, stand on here, squeeze the thing to put the poison in. Just it had killed me 15 times by then. I just gave up and read the Club Floyd walkthrough.
Yeah.
And they had tons of trouble with it too. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, I didn't feel that stupid.
Yeah.
Only just slightly. You
know, Ken Williams did it on his first try.
Yeah, I know, right? And he also was the lily pod. Oh, that guy. Oh, that guy. That was one of the chapters. That guy, Ken Williams.
And then there was this, I don't know.
Think I have any other puzzles written down here.
I was confused by, like, there was the chart of the colors,
dark and, something arrow and that right. Yeah,
it would be like black arrow, dull silver arrow, dull gray, arrow. Or right. And here's another one, vivid green arrow, skull symbol,
and it's like what?
And I thought that all of that would have more to do with the game. And there's a thing where you could transmute things. You can turn the lead into a diamond.
Right.
Whatever. And so but there was all this other information that was totally superfluous.
Mm-hmm.
So yep. I thought that was 100%. Weird.
I thought for sure that thing telling you all those conversions was going to be some giant last puzzle where I had to do things with all these colors and combine them because it would show like sometimes the whole chain of colors and sometimes like this color arrow underscore or question mark. So I'd have to determine like what does what and like what objects are those colors and somehow combine them. I thought it was going to be like a whole big thing. It was not.
Yeah.
There's the snake that you kill with the poison apple. So that's a nice simple one. Poison apple, give it the snake, bit on the nose, apple and snakes and stuff. So right. I'm like, I get
and,
it.
And it was, going with that. And if you try to eat the apple, you notice it's poisoned before you eat it. So right. I was like, oh, that. I see that at this point, I'm still thinking, oh, this game is not cruel.
Right. Ha.
That would have been so easy.
Would you call this game cruel? It killed me so many times. I found it difficult and I played a ton of guess the verb, guess the noun. But I don't know if I would call it.
No,
cruel.
I mean, I don't think there was any like walking death. Like,
was there
situations.
A point where you could you get in a walking death in this game?
I don't think so.
Where you died way earlier and didn't know it? I don't think you could.
No, I don't think so.
So I don't think it's actually a cruel game. It's just a really hard one.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, you kill the snake. You have to deal with the snake twice, which I thought was interesting. First,
Oil snake. Like snake oil.
I thought you might have to like throw water on it or something because oil and water don't mix.
I kept thinking it was going to be a curing thing because like snake oil, it's going to be like a thing. I kept thinking like something like that. Like, cause what the heck is an oil snake?
There was the puzzle at the end. You've got to turn the dial to a certain number.
You encounter it and it starts off at 79.18. It can go between like 0 and 100.
Right.
Yes.
And then he leaves the old dude.
The clunk. Clunk
or master, or whatever his name is.
The Toastmaster. Yes.
Freemason. I don't know what he was.
Whatever he is.
He left a note around at one point that has some numbers on it.
Yeah, it looks like a little math thing. It was like 2000 something.
Yeah, so I tried both of those numbers. Yeah, so I think you're supposed to add them, which I didn't do. I just tried, I took it at face value and I tried each of the numbers separately, which didn't work, but gave me funny spells. I didn't write them down, but it created like funny, nonsensical spells.
Right.
So that was kind of cute. But I didn't think there was nothing to me that to even hint that why should I add these numbers together? Why not subtract them?
They come as like a tally, like the one number is printed above the other and then there's a line under it. So I thought, okay, I'm doing something with these. I've got to subtract them. I've got to add them, multiply something, some way to combine. I got to do a bit shift. I got to do something on these things.
All right, I didn't get that, but okay. Yeah, that makes sense, I guess.
Well, the Clunk Master and I go way back, so I know how he thinks. Oh, that Clunk Master. By the time I was like, I'd say three quarters through the game, like by the time, slightly before getting to the point with the lily pod, the second lily thing, the under lily pod thing. Just before that, I got to the point where I was starting to look at the Club Floyd transcript just for like serious hints. And then I basically used that to as a walkthrough to tell me how to get past that point. And then it's like I uncorked it and I just like, just kept going back and I just basically read my way through the rest of the game. Unfortunately, I was like, just tell me how to finish. It's unfortunate when you get to that point because it's very unfulfilling. Mm-hmm. You're basically just reading stuff and I'm typing because I have to just to get to the end of the game.
Yeah. Alas, they can't all be as good as the Ken Williams over.
No, they can't. Syzygy, the Ken Williams story. So what do you think of the game overall? Like, what do you think people should, I mean, we've been so negative on this thing, which I'm feeling super Canadian guilt. Oh my God, so much guilt about negative we've been. Would you recommend it? Do you think people would play it?
Have you been too harsh? On one level, I like what you said. You said, it wasn't for me. And that's true. It wasn't for me. Mm. But I think there's better interactive fiction to play. And
yeah, but that does... But okay, but... Of course there is. But what game won't you say that of? Like, there's better than everything. Like, you can't hold it to that standard. Oh, it's not the greatest game that ever existed, so it's not worth my time.
Hollywood Hijinks. I would never say that about Hollywood Hijinks.
That's true. Hollywood Hijinks is great. Uncle Zebulon's hijinks. I think it's still worth playing. I think if you like, because both of us are less high on Zork games than the average person who's super into Infocom. I suspect most of our listeners are more into Zork than we are, and we're the podcasters. But people who like Infocom like Zork. Like, that was their, other than Hitchhikers, that's the big one for them. So if you're super into Zork and you like Zork type things, I think you're more likely to like this game and be better at this game than us. I think it's lacking the humor of a Zork game, though. I think it started funnier and then got less funny as it went. There weren't enough. If this was a funnier game, it would have sustained me through it. I'll put up with a lot for some funny jokes. If you'll make me laugh, I'll keep playing. And this one just didn't have the humor I think it needed to play in the Zork space. I think that was the problem here. At least I didn't find it funny, but maybe other people would find it hilarious, but it lost it for me. So I think that was the problem. Mm-hmm. But if you really like Zork games, I think you're going to like this more than I did, is my honest opinion. I don't want to scare people off from playing this. But if you don't like Zork games, if you're like, no, I hate that thing, I'm here for the story, like modern Infocom things seem to be very, or modern IF seems to be very story, then no, you're not going to like this. This doesn't seem to be the thing that everybody's telling us we're going to get from all this modern IF, these fancy story games.
Yeah.
And so says Ken Williams. Anyway, I think that's all I got.
Okay.
What do you got?
No, that's all I got.
No.
That's all I got.
Okay, well, that's enough.
Sorry.
I feel like we roasted a game. I feel guilty.
Yeah.
I feel guilty. I feel so guilty. We're going to love Secret of Monkey Island, though. We're going to say nice things about that. That's it.
Awesome.
Know it. Okay. Know it. I feel it. So, sorry to bring everybody down. Please come back to our podcast. We do like some games. This has been Eaten by Gru, the interactive fiction podcast. If you want, you can send us feedback. You can email us, gru@monsterfeed.com, or hit us up on Twitter. He is @ksavitz. I am @Carrington. If you want to help other people find this podcast, then we'd appreciate it if you give us a nice review on iTunes, or as I say, just repeatedly download our shows over and over and over and over again. iTunes will think you love us. Show notes and such can be found at monsterfeed.com, and thanks to MC Frontalot for letting us use his song as our theme tune. Although it was actually written by Ken Williams, we know MC Frontalot, you just ripped him off. Next up will be Secret of Monkey Williams, which point and click, which doesn't have a sherbet in it, but does, if I recall, have a spitting contest. I think it's the one with the spitting contest, so that should be fun. I really liked it. I think you're gonna like it too. I'm excited to dive into point and click. forget all this interactive fiction nonsense. I'm done with it. Let's do a point and click game.
Point and click. Excellent. Oh, there's too much typing. Too much typing.
Too much typing. Too much reading all these new words. Free. Anyway, thank you for podcasting with me.
Thank you for podcasting with me, Carrington.
Okay. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Walked into the slavering fangs of a lurking groom.
On my screen, it's a giant version of my head.
Great.
I don't know what you're seeing, but my computer is showing me not you, just me.
Your head is
looming over myself.
On what my screen, happening? Your head is smaller than actual size.
Well, you'd have to have a pretty big monitor to see anything.
Isn't that a They Might Be Giants song? Something about she's actual size, but she seems much bigger.
Probably. Yeah. Probably.